morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to TNT Hoops episode 13. Devin's having an episode today. We're doing it, the podcast via phone call. Just catching up with my boy Ansel. Ansel, how you doing, bro, this morning?
Yeah, we'll call this a shoot around, actually. Yeah, this will be a shoot around volume 3, I think, since there's not really much to talk about. And it was a little bit of a slower week, but we do want to kind of give you guys something to talk about.
Yeah, so just a quick overview of the topics we're going to be discussing today. We got some Sixers recap, per usual. We'll, you know, discuss the hometown team a little bit, you know, talk about our, you know, our rough week going 1-3, losing 3 in a row before bouncing back this weekend against Chicago. We'll briefly discuss, Dwayne Wade versus Paul Pierce, their career on the jump earlier this week. Paul Pierce said he was better than D. Wade. He had a better career, so we'll discuss that. Russell Westbrook averaging a triple-double for the third consecutive year. Amazing feat. Let's talk about that. You know, he kind of is making this his standard now. So we never thought another person would have a triple-double, but Russ is doing it. And just some playoffs start Saturday, so just some playoff predictions Ansel and I are going to get into. So what's up, bro? Let's get into this.
Nothing much, bro. Real good weekend. Just personally and then sports-wise, just with everything that was going on, as you touched on before. We have the national championship with UVA and Texas Tech today, actually, going on around 8 o'clock. So just kind of give me your thoughts on the Final Four, this two matchups on Saturday, and then your prediction.
Yeah, so Final Four was amazing, honestly. The Auburn-Virginia game was like so live. It was going back and forth the whole time. Crazy ending with Samir Dowdy fouling Kyle Guy in the corner on that three. And Ty Jerome was dribbling the ball up the court the play before, and he dribbled the ball off his leg and they missed a double dribble, which probably would have turned the game around. But crazy ending in that game, and Virginia came out on top. It's crazy to see, because last year they lost in the first round to the 16th seed.
They had the worst luck last year. It's just so interesting to see how things like that just kind of turn for a team. While I am happy that Virginia is playing in the national championship, them and Texas Tech being kind of just like the two best defensive teams and teams are playing at such a slow pace, I don't think it's going to be that appealing for the casual viewer and for the eye. But I do think it will be a good product of basketball, just given the Kyle Guys, like you said, the DeAndre Hunters of the world.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Guy. Yeah, I haven't really thought about it, but I think I'm going to take I think I'm just going to go with Virginia. Destiny seems to be on their side. Just like what we just touched on, you know, they lost last year. Kyle Guy said, you know, we made history last year for the wrong reasons, so this year, you know, we're going to make it for all the right reasons. So, I don't know. It just seems like, you know, late in games, they've been pulling it out against, who was it, Purdue. They had the big man had the floater at the buzzer to tie it up to go to overtime. They ended up winning that game.
Yeah.
And then this game, they're down 2 with a second left, and Kyle Guy gets fouled on a 3 with 0.6 seconds left. So it just seems like Destiny's on their side right now. And they can just play – they just play defense, man. They lock up. And this is just the biggest epitome of defense wins championships, because they're keeping these games in the low 60s and they're pulling those games out at the end. Texas Tech looks good too. They've been killing all tournaments, so it's definitely gonna be a good game.
Yeah. And Culliver didn't really even have the best game last game against Michigan State, and they're still able to pull it out. So I think like a team like that, they only play 8 guys, so it's definitely gonna be a very condensed, national championship. But as I said before, it still will be a good product of basketball. And I think that if you were just kind of tuning into the NCAA tournament just to watch Duke and Kentucky and North Carolina, still watch this just to kind of see just different coaching styles and matchups. And, you know,
just to finish that up, and then we're going to move into our Sixers topics. Jared Culver, he finished with, I think, 10, but
he had 10-5-5.
Right, but he scored the last 8 points for Texas Tech. which are all obviously key buckets. He only had 10 points, but he scored all his points at the end of the game when it really mattered. So that was big for his, you know, draft stock and things of that nature, just him moving forward, people seeing him as a prospect. But let's get into these Sixers topics. Like I said earlier, tough week, 3-game losing streak to the Mavs. And the Mavs, the Hawks, we didn't have Embiid for those two on the road. Two young teams. The Hawks are really kind of still playing their main rotation, but the Mavs not so much. So that was a really bad loss. And then we had Milwaukee. Yeah.
And Milwaukee.
A different, you know, vibe to that game, but we ended up losing at the end. No Jimmy Butler. Didn't have enough firepower. Giannis, 45 points. What did you think about the week for the Sixers?
All right, so briefly, I'll just touch on the first two, the two-game road trip. Dallas was just tough. Tough for us inside. I think Bolden played a majority of our minutes for our big that night. It was just not, I mean, I think we're evenly matched on the boards, but just like plays around the rim without Embiid.
Yeah, that kind of game was a wash. It was a wash, man.
We defended really, we were just really lazy on defense just throughout the whole game. You got to just see. It was one of the, we've said it before, where this team just kind of thinks that they can coast against some of the lesser teams in the NBA, but when you play the teams in the West, like, on the night-to-night base, especially Dallas, Dallas is really good at home. I actually should have found the record. They're above 500 at home, but it's just kind of difficult to just go into a building and just try to squeeze out a win when that team actually cares and they're not trying to tank.
Yeah.
And then with Atlanta, it's the same thing. We've been 1-3 against them this year. Lloyd Pierce has our number, obviously, as being our assistant coach last year and specializing in, on our defense and knowing all of our weaknesses. Really exposed us with Trae Young. Trae had 33-12 that night. A lot of top of the key work from him. Yeah, he just killed us. I'm not excited to see him for the next couple of years, but that tandem of him and Collins, man, like, if we're going to come in and play lazy, just like I said, same thing with Dallas, like, they're just going to take advantage of all those opportunities. I think they shot like 78% from the line that night. Compared to us shooting like 54%. That, again, indicative of just us not being really locked in and checked into the game.
Yeah, so let's just talk about games, Milwaukee.
Unless you have anything to say about those two games.
Were a wash. Not much effort. Just to second what you were saying. Not much effort. No Embiid. End of the season. So I don't know if our guys melded in, kind of. But, you know, losing those two games had Boston, you know, Indiana gaining some ground on us. So that kind of gave us a little scare for a little bit. We locked up the 3 seed last night with Boston losing, which isn't necessarily a great thing. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But,
yeah,
we'll so the Bucks game, of course.
All right, so before we start, why don't you think that we were trying to work in Shake and Zaire and that 2-game road trip without Embiid? And, what do you think Brett's purpose was for not trying to give those two guys
a shot?
I feel like that would have been the perfect opportunity. No, they didn't play in that Atlanta game. Dude did not play coaching decision in that Atlanta game. And then Dallas game, they did play. Shake played 17, Zaire played 10 minutes. Both of them didn't score.
Hold on.
Or take a shot. Well,
they both didn't play at all.
They both didn't play at all against Atlanta.
So who played?
Against Atlanta.
Jimmy Butler played, obviously.
Our regular rotation, obviously. Yeah. Our regular rotation without Embiid. Bolden replaced him, and then Scott Ennis, Boban, Amir, TJ.
That's why they didn't play. That was a game we were trying to win.
I mean, Ennis only played 12 minutes.
What'd you say?
Ennis only played 12 minutes. I mean,
Ennis only played 12 minutes. He never plays major minutes, but it's just about staggering the starters, like getting somebody in there right there. The only reason they both play is because you don't.
Yeah, but if our reasoning be.
No, the only reason the only reason they both play is because you don't really know what you're going to get out of either one. So you're kind of trying to just have options off the bench. You play both of them together. With James Ennis being out, that's kind of like why he's been working them into the rotation now. And I'd actually like to see them play a lot of minutes, maybe 25, 30 minutes in the last couple games, just so they have more of an NBA feel, because we're going to need them, you know, with Ennis being out until maybe game three or four of the first round. we're going to need Shake Milton and Zaire Smith, which sounds absurd, like looking back a couple weeks, just thinking who we would try to get on the buyout market.
Yeah, and it's not even needing them to, we don't even need those guys to like give us like 10 to 12 points off the bench. We just need like consistency. Like if their plus minus just stays around like 3 or 4, like that's just it, you know? And just to be a consistent cog. Like I think the other night when Zaire came in that Milwaukee game, like instantly makes an impact by hitting a 3, plays good defense, and he was really active that game. I think he had like a stat in almost everything in the box score that night.
It was a plus 6 from the field in 19 minutes. It went for 5 from the field, missed the easy layup just because he got ahead of himself, didn't know if he was going to dunk it or lay it up. You know, kind of a rookie moment there. The kid was 160 pounds a couple months ago from a peanut allergy, so he's came a long way. But I love seeing Zaire play right now. I wish Shake Milton would make his shots, man. I think Shake Milton could be one of those factors where, you know, he can make 2 or 3 threes. Yeah, he makes 2 or 3 threes a game.
I really do think he's a rookie.
It's his first year. I mean, they're being thrown in the fire, and especially at the craziest time of the year on a competing team. So it seems like they're not – we're not
But for us, I think we see a lot from those two, like, just basketball-wise. Like, yeah, like, it's more than the numbers, but, like, you see just the movement. Like, they're just way better, I guess, prospects than TJ McConnell. TJ just gives you stability, and you know what you're going to get. But, like, the way that Shake and Zaire move, like, I guess, like, offensively and with the ball, like, it's just, like, I don't know, just a drastic improvement to the offense.
All right, let's get into that Milwaukee game. Let's get into that Milwaukee game.
All right, I'll let you go first. Just what do you think? I'm not upset at the game, but I'm not happy. Like, for that being our last important game of the year against the top-tier team, like, definitely not satisfied.
So, in the grand scheme, like, looking at it now, you know, after seeing how everything played out, game actually wasn't important at all. And it just wasn't as big as, you know, we probably thought it was in Philly or how the casual viewer would see, just because we had no Jimmy Butler. And B was rusty just coming back in. He shot 31 shots to get 34 points. And B had 34, 13 assists and 13 boards. Triple-double, second triple-double of his career. And he was 7 for 10 from the line, shot 12 for 31 from the field. Kind of like a lot of shots in there that he usually makes. He was kind of rusty with his moves, but it was like a field game. Like he was just coming back. Ben Simmons shot 5 times, 6 points. It's annoying at this point.
Disgusting.
Yeah. It's like, it's annoying, how good he could be. And it's all about his mindset, like how he's, you know, taking his approach to the game. Cause, you know, him and Giannis aren't playing any different. Giannis is shooting a couple threes because, you know, Embiid's literally playing in the lane and Giannis has balls. Fucking Ben Simmons is scared to look bad, so he won't shoot it. So he'd rather get 5 points. He'd rather shoot 5 times and have 13 assists. It's frustrating because we need more from him.
For someone being as smart as he is as a basketball mind, like, you would think that he would understand, like, all right, at some point, like, I'm just putting like, you know, just because, like, it's going
to be a pretty boy, bro. He's pretty. He tried to look cute. Everything he does, he tries to look cute. That's why, you know, he go at the end of the – it's little things I've been noticing about Ben Simmons, though, throughout the year. And I love Ben. Like, I'm not here to slander Ben. That's all people do is kill Ben in Philly. You know, you either love him or hate him. But it's kind of like getting to – because I wanted to ask you, do you think his jump shot is limiting us? Because when we play these elite teams, like, we're getting a little bit better because we have more talent now. We're competing better. But it's almost like he's a little factor. If the ball's going to be in his hands and he's not going to shoot it, it kind of makes our offense predictable, which, you know, we're just being a drum that's already, you know, touching on things that's already been talked about.
Yeah, that issue's getting worse. It's getting worse with teams like Milwaukee, because Milwaukee now, they're not learning how to play against it, but they're getting better at playing against it. Like, Giannis, I think that was the best that someone aside from Boston has played it, kind of that free Giannis, safety rule. And kind of just, like, lurking in the paint and just recovering. Like, Simmons, as soon as he would get the ball to his hand, everyone was flocked. Like, the next guy, this guy's kind of just screwed because, like, shit, I got two guys, like, not sprinting at me for
right. His half-court games become so predictable, man. And he gives in so easily as far as, like, driving to the basket. Only in transition is he pushing it at you, kind of going whether or not you stop him. But in the half court, He doesn't have any type of threat from the perimeter, so he can't really hit you off with a move and get all the way to the basket. Yeah. And when he does, he gonna celebrate about it. He gonna showboat and run down the court like he just did the craziest shit. That's another thing I noticed about him. You know, he had a layup to end the half. They do the 1-2 pick and roll with him and JJ, and JJ comes up in back screens and then curls off it. So if both guys go with JJ, or they kind of shift to JJ a little bit, Ben kind of has an avenue to go to his left, and he had that, and he came and he, you know, took a 1-2 step down the lane and finished with his right hand, and he ran down the court looking at the crowd like he, yeah, but, you know, he just, you know, won an NBA championship and shit. It's just
you
like,
and I were talking about that. Yeah, you and I were talking about his first two buckets that quarter. Like before that, like he did nothing. Like it was almost like he wasn't on the floor before that. And so, like, when you're watching the game, it's just like, all right, Ben, I understand, but we needed that the whole first half. You know what I mean? But now all of a sudden, you're going to wake up when it's not meaningless, because the end of the quarter is really important to close quarter strong. But, like, don't make it seem like you just made the most gravitational impact. And then I think Giannis is really started to
Oh, yeah, he's the perfect player to guard him.
He's definitely the
perfect player to guard him. He has all that length and all he can do. He'll just back up because Ben won't shoot it. So you can drive it at me, but your shot gonna get challenged. And Giannis look at Ben like he a little boy. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's just it's getting a little frustrating right now. It's kind of worrying me for the playoffs. But you know, Brett has to find a way to hide it. And like we always say, put Ben in the dunker spot. We'll see how that works. But we need guys to handle the ball, and that's gonna have to be Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris.
Yeah, I think Butler's gonna.
Yeah. So last thing before we.
What do you think about Tobias recently? Before we get off, what do you think about Tobias recently?
I think
just kind of.
I'll just talk about him generally. Down. Tobias is kind of leveling out. When he got here, he was playing out of his mind. He fit right in because he was getting like 20 a game in LA, but he came here, he was getting like 21, 22, he's getting a tick over 20. You know, now he's down in the 16 to 18 range. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's really slumping, but I feel like he's kind of finding his niche where he has to. You know, how he has to fit in with all the talent we have in the starting lineup. But his percentages have been going down a little bit. He can get a little bit more efficient. And I hope that comes in the playoffs. But when he gets more of a custom role of what he should be doing. But I think Tobias is fine. I like what I'm seeing for the most part from the trade. It's just the lack of depth is what's kind of killing us right now.
Yeah, I agree. And then last guy we'll ask about is Greg Monroe. We brought him in, and he played his first game against Chicago on Saturday night. Just thoughts on that addition to the big man group and kind of how you see that rotation moving forward, especially, I guess, playing Brooklyn, then Milwaukee. Like,
I don't really care for him, to be honest. I'm not even going to sit here and lie. I think he was – Brett called it another, you know, veteran presence, but, I mean, it's just another center that can't play in the playoffs. You got to think.
Well, I think he can play more than Amir.
Were you playing Amir anyway?
Weird to say, but I mean, it depends. Like if Bolden and Boban can't play, you have to play somebody, right? And so I think it's just kind of gives another security blanket.
I mean, but that's if
have another option. I'm not saying I want to
play Monroe. If two guys can't play, you're talking about. You're not talking about.
Boban, I see not be Boban won't be able to play against Milwaukee, so he's already scratched. And then if Bolden. Is, you know, Bolden is so shaky defensively. Like, if he's having one of those off nights, you have to kind of call him to
the line. Greg Monroe will be able to play against Milwaukee?
I think it's a bigger problem than we even think. Not play, but if Bolden and Boban, because Boban won't be able to play.
I'm saying, but.
And if Bolden is having one of those nights where he's just letting everyone run by him and just kind of not closing out well and not getting positioning, then you have to play somebody else.
I agree with all that, but. That's not the guy. Like, he's not the guy, though. That was just my thing. So,
and he's not going to save us. I'm not making it seem like he's saving us or anything, but he's
what? Yeah, Greg Monroe's the perfect epitome of how much the league has changed. Like, he was a borderline max guy a couple years ago. And now he's a late season signing. Veteran minimum. But, I mean, I don't really see anything in Greg Monroe helping us. He may be able to play a couple minutes here and there just due to experience, and he's not really going to mess up. He's not going to be out there and fuck it up like how Bolden potentially could. But if you can't play Bolden and you can't play Boban, then Greg Monroe is probably not a guy you can play in the game either just because of how those two play. They're completely on the different opposites by the spectrum. So you know what I'm saying? You kind of put in a slower guy, but can't really shoot either. So it's like, I don't know. I don't really see him being much. But last thing I want to touch on the Sixers, I don't even really want to discuss it. I just want to kind of say it. With this injury bug we have now, with Butler being out, you know, for his last games with his back injury.
Jay
Bennett's obviously with the quad. Like we just talked about, Zaire and Shake kind of got to step up. They got to, you know, own those minutes. And not even necessarily, like you said, you want, you know, positive plus minus. It's been not even so much that, but if they give us, you know, five, 6, 7 points off the bench, you know, give us a little lift. You know, play some defense, just guard guys. Like, we need people to be able to guard point guards and shooting guards on other teams.
Just come in and not get cooked. Like, the thing that we always refer back to is the Boston series when our guards were just getting smoked when they came in, especially our guards with the bench. Like, Bellinelli was just...
Him and Redick.
Not Redick was coming off the bench, but it's just putting guard.
McConnell. It's
just a whole completely right. one-sided.
We have all those guys.
Yeah. And so we just need those two guys
to actually guard...
Help out Ben, Jimmy, to guard D'Angelo Russell, because it seems like we're going to play the Nets in the first round. Detroit is just absolutely going to the tank. So, like, those two guys will have to be on Russell, LeVert, and Dinwiddie for a little bit, and just need them not to let them go off.
So, just rhythm. It's a double-edged sword between rhythm versus rest. Like, do we rest our guys for the last couple games, you know, last two games? I don't want to see J.J. Redick. I think he should take Mel the last two games. We already locked the 3 seed. No point in seeing J.J. Redick anymore. I feel like we worked him crazy to end the year, and he needs, you know, some rest here, get a week off, and then come back fresh in the playoffs. I don't need to see any of our key guys, to be honest. We can make something work where we're, you know, resting our guys. That's kind of how I look at those last couple games. What do you think?
Yeah, like 25 minutes max for any of the starters. Simmons, it seems weird, but I never want to see Simmons not playing because I don't know what I'm going to get from him. I'd rather see him kind of get his confidence coming against Miami in Chicago. But like, at the end of the day, like as you said,
that's the last that he cockiest motherfucker that can't shoot a jump shot in NBA history. He doesn't need confidence. He just.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I think it's kind of fake confidence, not fake confidence, but it's not. You can't say you're a competent player than the fourth quarter.
Oh, he can't shoot.
Those are contradictory to one another.
He's smart.
Yeah, but
he's a
can't
smart
shoot
player. Like, he knows, like, if I shoot this basketball, it's going to hurt the team, one, and two, it may not look pretty. And he's a pretty boy. So keep referring back to that combination. Mm. He's not about to sit there and look dumb and airball three and be on social media. That's how I think Ben looks at the game. But,
Yeah, but that's not smart. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're saying that's smart, but like from a basketball standpoint, like for you not to be, not to just simply say not to be any sort of threat from to shoot the ball, but for you not even to look to the basket in the fourth. Like, no, I'm not saying shooting jump shots, but even when he's like gets close to the painted area, like he hasn't even attempted a shot leading up to that point, so he's not even looking towards the basket to score, like, or get to the lane or get to the foul line, you know? And so that doesn't speak confidence to me, but. We'll see. I think Brett will kind of just give these guys, as you said, just a rest. These last two playoffs start Saturday.
Let's
transition to our next topic.
Trust the process.
Throughout the week.
Yeah.
Throughout the week, there's a conversation that was brought up by my good friend Paul Pierce, who I guess, I don't know what he was thinking, but he tried to make the case for him having a better career than Dwayne Wade.
So,
you can elaborate on that a little bit more.
I'm not even going to lie. I hated Paul Pierce, you know, because I'm a Sixers fan, obviously, played in Boston. He was one of those athletes that was, you know, he was cocky, but he was really good. Like, he was so sturdy for so long. So what we're not going to do is slander him and say, kill his career and act like Paul Pierce wasn't great, because he was great. And he was great for a long time. And he can be compared to D-Wade. I got frustrated when I saw the convo just because I think D-Wade is, you know, better, hands down. But it's definitely, like, Paul Pierce was elite. Like, I went back and looked a little, like, Paul Pierce was dude. So, just to get into that, man, I think Wade was the better player. I think Paul Pierce is the better shooter. If we're talking about actual just shooting the basketball from three, you know, from the mid-range. I think Paul Pierce was the better shooter, the perimeter shooter, but I think Wade was always a solid shooter, so that never it didn't really hinder his game and didn't affect his ability to get to the rim, which separated him. I think Wade's ability to get in the lane and finish.
Yes. Field goal percentage.
Wade's ability to get in the lane and finish was second to none at the time in his prime. So I think Wade was the better player. And there's different versions of Wade. There's Flash the first couple years when, you know, he played with Shaq and they went to the final in 2006 and he took that series over and won a championship in his third year. Yeah. And then there's Heat Wade with LeBron and Bosh where.
Yeah, he started to take a back seat to LeBron after that first year. And you really saw like him being the perfect Robin, like almost the best second guy that I've seen in a while, I guess before Clay and Steph in that 2015 stretch. But him and LeBron, I think they won 27 games that year. And that was especially because I think Wade decided, listen, anytime LeBron needs me to step into the game and step into the fold and kind of just take over the scoring load and handle the offense, then I'll be willing to do that. But until then, like, I'm just kind of waiting in the fold.
He was that Heat stretch was, you know, it was a superstar who seemed to be aging because of his injuries, but was, you know, first 2 years was still, like you said, the best Robin in the game, you know, just the best Robin, arguably of all time, just being that second guy, you know, locking up on defense and then he was so good at his role that he was getting LeBron easy buckets. Like, that doesn't usually happen. You got to think, you know, the number one option gets everybody else easy buckets, which LeBron did, obviously. But Wade was getting LeBron those lobs in transition. Wade was, you know, finding LeBron on those backdoor cuts and those hard cuts when he drives baseline. LeBron finally cuts to the ring. Wade drops it off for him, dunk. You know what I'm saying? Wade was getting him shots. So Wade was, you know, the perfect second fiddle, like you said. Just to touch on Wade in the 2006 finals, you know, down 0-2 to down 0-2 to the Mavericks. The Dallas, yeah, they went back and won four straight games behind their third-year player in D-Wade. Game three, he had 42 points. Game four, he had 36. Game five, he had 43 again. And then game six, he had 36. All wins, four straight wins, finals MVP, finished averaging 35, 8-4. like I said, in his third year, bro. Like, so that's like Ben doing this next year. You know what I'm saying? Crazy, like Ben doing this next year. Like, that's like Embiid doing it this year and how crazy it still would seem, like, even in just his third year. So I think Wade needs his credit for that. But let's talk a little Pierce. Yeah. Like, what do you think about Paul Pierce?
So for Paul Pierce, I kind of took a look at that championship year in 2008. I think that was the year when Allen and KG came over to Boston. He averaged 19.7, 20 points a game, essentially, 6 rebounds, 4 assists.
26 and 4? Shot
44% from the field.
26 and 4? Huh? Like 26,
no.
6 boards?
No. 20 points,
yeah, that's
6
what I said,
boards,
26 and 4.
Assists.
Okay. Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you said that.
No, go ahead.
He was also the finals MVP that year. And like that, I think that Boston team, it was kind of hard to pick out who was the best guy on that team. But I think just kind of from, if you're a coach and like anybody's aspect, like he was the centerpiece, I guess you could say. And,
no,
right?
I wouldn't say that. It was his team because he was there first, obviously, you know, it was kind of built around him and the trades. But I think Kevin Garnett was the best player on the team, and I think Rajon Rondo was the most important player on the team. I think Paul Pierce was their best scorer, though. You know, he was the guy that he was a go-to, go get a bucket, you know, under the fourth quarter guy. But that doesn't necessarily make you the best player on the team. And people always take that and make it seem like that's always the case. But I think he was their, you know, late game go get a bucket guy, and, you know, get buckets throughout the game, just being Paul Pierce. But you can see his numbers were down from earlier in his career. You know, 2005-2006 season, for reference, he averaged 26.5, 6 boards, 5 assists on 47-36 and 77 from the free throw line. So, you know, he was clearly scoring much more before those guys.
It should be noted, though, in that 07 year, he only played 47 games. I think that's the year with that.
That's still a solid sample size. You still see what he was capable of doing. You see those numbers went down because those guys came and made it a more balanced attack. So I don't think he was the best player on that team. I don't know what you think about that, but I don't think he even was the best player on his team during his finals run. So he really struggled.
He was extremely important, and I think looking back now, a lot of the memories that flash back to mind are just like that bullshit moment when he got carried off the court and come back, and to
I think it was like 12 points
when he came back. Like,
see, that's why I hate Paul Pierce.
He was definitely faking that shit.
That's why I hate Paul Pierce, man.
But
like, how do you? The rule, the number one rule in sports is if you get carried off the court, you better not come back. Like, if you making somebody, if you're sitting around on the ground to the point where somebody has to carry you off, or even if you're on the ground and somebody has to you holding somebody's shoulders and limping off, then you probably shouldn't come back. Like, you stopped the game. Like, it was like that serious. Like, why are you coming back? Like, if you were coming back in the first place, there's no reason you should have been laying on that ground acting like you got shot, bro. Come on.
They were holding both of his legs up with both arms. Like, that's just one of the funniest scenes, but whatever. Let's just stay on the conversation. We'll just do the quick comparison of just accolades. 3-1 championships in favor of D. Wade. Paul Pierce played 3 more seasons than Wade. There'll be 2 more after this year. In the playoffs, damn near the same amount of time. Depends if the Heat make the playoffs this year, then it'll be even at 14. Dwayne Wade has 3 more All-Star appearances with 13-10. Both have a Finals MVP. Wade was first team. Paul Pierce never made a first team All-NBA. I don't particularly know if that's correct. I would like to go back and kind of just compare him to the other forwards some of those years to see if he should have been close.
Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter and Kobe Bryant? Yeah, that dude never was fucking with them, so. never was fucking with those dudes, so that was those were. I guess Kobe wasn't a forward though, but you know LeBron had came in the league too, so shit started getting real.
It was over point, and defense is what I think a lot of people use as separation for these two. Paul Pierce wasn't really noted as one of the better defenders.
I'm gonna cut you off there. Okay. Paul Pierce locked up. Paul Pierce played really good fucking defense. I'm not even going to say. I think D-Wade was the better defender. Yeah, he locked up. He was a lockdown defender. Like, he was known as a two-way player type dude. Like, he gave Kobe fits, like, here and there. Like, he was a dude that played defense. Like, he was given that a label. But D-Wade was the better defender because D-Wade was an on-ball and off-ball defender. Like, he's getting steals in. You know, in a passing lane to take it to the other end, he could turn defense and offense really quickly.
Impactful defender, game-changing defender, almost. Like, I think
Wade was a better defender, but Pierce played defense, bro. Don't get that fucked up.
And I think this is the last thing I'll say to the argument. Pierce's, I think, main caveat for his was, if you would have gave me the team that Wade had, which was kind of a knock to his guys, KG and Ray and Rondo, that he would have definitely had the same amount of chance. He said like 5 or 6, actually, which is
so fucking
nuts. Like, he said, if you would have gave him Shaq at 24, and it's just like, Paul, hey, like, it's not, like, Shaq was good. Like, I think Shaq was like an 18 point per game score, but Shaq was a
shell. They weren't winning that shit. He's not winning. First of all, just a little touch on the Shaq, my fault to cut you off, but just a touch on the Shaq shit, there's no way, Shaq and D-Wade was not going to be enough. Like, I mean, not Shaq and D-Wade. Shaq and Paul Pierce wouldn't be enough. Paul Pierce not giving you 44 games in a row. He's just not. It's not. He can give you 30.
I'm not letting Paul Pierce.
He's not giving you 44 games in a row to beat the best team in the league that year. There's no way. He's not. And then the whole LeBron thing, like, you're not going to be in Boston and say, it's me, KG, and Ray Holland. What they used to call themselves, that team? I don't know. But they used to act like they were the big four. But they were better than they used to act like they were better than the Heat, right? You know, they were LeBron had to go to Wade. Yeah. No, don't say now that if you had Wade and Bosh, you'd be winning all these championships. Because at the time, y'all thought y'all were better than them. And I think they actually beat the Heat. I know the Heat beat them.
Yeah.
The Heat beat them the Heat beat them for sure to go to the chip, but they were competing with the Heat around that time, so don't say that. Do not say that, dog. Don't say that, because you give Wade 3 Hall of Famers next time, too, he'd be balling. So don't say that, man. That's why I hate Paul Pierce. The shit he says, like, on live TV, like, these predictions has become, like, a running joke. Michelle Beat on Jalen Rose are, like, asking him, like, if you think you're better than this guy. Like, he said he's a better shooter than Klay.
Yeah, they're trying to just bait him into it now at this point, which is kind of sad to see.
It's like, funny, though. It's actually funny. But he really believes this. He really believes this stuff. He believes this stuff. That's all.
And that's respectable. I think that's respectable for any guy that played in the NBA. Like, you know, I mean, especially he's only, what, 2 years removed? Like, it's hard for you to just kind of give it up to these guys. Like, oh, he's better. Especially when he's your like, as a guy that you played against for your whole life, and now just because you're sitting in a chair and be like, oh, yeah, he's better than me, it's a little tougher now. Making it.
That's a good point. It's a good point.
But a little delusional at the same time.
Yeah, good point. You just think, you know, when these guys get older and look back in the grand scheme of things, they see who they were better than and who probably had the number, and then who they probably had, who they were better than. But you can't go and say you're a better shooter than Klay Thompson. Like, bro, you see what he's doing on the court right now. You weren't ever capable of doing that. So just stop saying shit like that. But let's get into our next topic, man.
Klay Thompson went from like shooting like 29% to 40% to end the year. But our last two topics of the year, Russell Westbrook's triple-double for the third consecutive year. We've talked about this before in passing.
Hold on, can I say this real quick?
My personal take on it.
Our takes on it. I just want to address this because most people think I'm a Russell Westbrook hater, and I'm a realist with Russ. I see the talent, and I see, you know, I see the all-time talent, and I see the all-time athleticism, and how special he is as a player. And just to be able to average a triple-double for 3 years is insane to me. And we'll obviously discuss that a little bit more moving forward. But I just want to address that. For everybody that thinks I'm a hater, this is a great segment for me because I really want to discuss this about how crazy I think this, you know, this is about Russ averaging his triple-double, because this really is insane. But go ahead.
Yeah. So to put it in perspective, it started in 2016-2017, the first year when KD left. Russ averaged 31. 11 boards and 10 assists. The next year after that, the year when it was Paul George's first year with them, he averaged 25, 10 and 10. And then this year, I think he sealed the deal 2 games ago, and he's averaging 23, 11 and 10. So scoring has dropped a little bit since the first triple-double average, and which was the first one with Oscar Robertson. But again, like, it's an incredible feat. It just shows you how active of a player he is. And, I guess just the motor. But for me, like, I'm just definitely on one side of the plate with this. I don't deem triple doubles to be that important. The first thing I always think of is, like, LeBron always averages like 27, 8, and 8. You don't think if LeBron wanted to average a triple double for 10 years in a row, he could, right? But there's just kind of more important things on a basketball court than you hunting to get a rebound and you trying to get to 10 assists, you know, like some nights don't deem for you to have to do that, you know, but sometimes you can kind of see Russ, like, he's making decisions based on, I need 3 more assists to make it to 10. And that's just not how you should be thinking on a basketball court. Granted, the 2020 night was really important just because it was significant for Nipsey Hussle. But like, even stuff like that, like, imagine if that was an important game and your star point guard is trying to get 20, 20, and 20, not just taking what's given to him. And I think some of it's kind of trying to do too much, and that is a thing on the basketball court, like, where we would like our guys to fill the stat sheet and the numbers, but Russ, we know we can get 10 boards and 10 assists out of you, but at what point are you going down into the paint, taking a board away from Steven Adams and kind of wasting steps, if that makes sense, when you could have just leaked out of the court and too passively, just let PG bring it up or let Schroeder bring it up. You know what I mean? Like, one of those types of things. Like, I don't like to see you always trying to get your numbers.
So, my biggest thing on Russ, I'm just going to give you everything. My biggest thing on Russ is, you know, my knock on him is the efficiency. I'm just looking at the numbers here. In 2016, he shot 42.5% from the field. Last year, he brought that up a little bit to 44, so 44.9, so 45%, which is like sturdy. 45% for a guard is like probably my minimum. I want my guard shooting from the field, especially an elite guard. And then this year, he's back down to 42%. So it's just, he's always in that low 40 range, which I don't really want my point guards in, because that means you're taking a couple shots that aren't, probably aren't the best shots you should be taking. Yeah. You're taking a couple bad shots a game that you probably shouldn't be taking. You know, that's my knock with Russ. And the 3-point percentage, he's a volume 3-point shooter. He's at 28% this year. He's at 20.
Yeah, he was
29 last year. So
6 threes a game.
Just efficiency is my biggest thing with Russ, man. And then his free, obviously his free throw percentage is way down this year. He's at 65%, which is odd because he's always been an 80% shooter over his career. So I don't know really what happened there with, say, his mechanics, because that's usually the issue at the free throw line. But just to this, just to touch on the triple double, okay, the whole stat padding aspect that you're kind of bringing into play, I think that was more his first year, that first year averaging it. I think they were doing that more because that was the first time you've ever seen it. And even if you look here, you know, he was slightly above 10 in both, 10.7 boards. Well, he was above, but slightly above 10 in assists. So that year, it was more the taking the rebounds away from Steven Adams and looking for that extra assist when maybe he has a layup. He might just throw it out to a three-point shooter or doing things in that nature to try to get the triple-double. And now I kind of see.
Yeah. That last game, do you remember? Not to interrupt, do you remember that last game, what he needed? I think he needed to get, like, what, like 12 rebounds?
Yeah, he was.
His last game? He got 16 to average the triple-double.
Yeah. it was crazy. And you can't, it's also a double-edged sword that you can't knock a guy for being able to do this on the court, right? Being able to grab a board, and transition and then make the pass. Being able to grab a board and push it and take it all the way to the rim. Like, you can't knock a guy for having that ability. So I will never do that. And I feel like now it's becoming more in the flow of the game, how he's getting these triple-doubles. This year he's averaging 23, 11, and 11. Yeah. More in the flow of the game, getting Paul George involved. You know, his rebounding is just going to be there because his motor is an unmatched motor, like something we've never seen before. A guy that's able to play 150% on every possession, every single night, 82 games a year.
A point guard getting two offensive rebounds a game.
It's crazy. So, I can't knock the passion and the hustle and the grit. And like I said, I think it's becoming more in the flow of the game, and that's critical. And the last thing I want to.
So, do you think that helps him this year? Kind of just because the scoring is dipped and like kind of going into the playoffs, like
100%. Because you know, like I keep saying, you're getting your lead guy involved more. Paul George, you're getting those other guys easier shots, guys that possibly can't create for themselves as well as you or Paul George would be able to. He's getting guys easier shots. The Terrence Fergusons, Steven Adams at the rim, you know, Nerlens Noel, you know, all those guys there right now, he's getting them all easy shots, which is so critical in the game. And the last thing I want to touch on is just the triple-double in general. I would say it has become overrated in basketball because people don't understand. There's an impactful triple-double, and then there's just a triple-double, right? There's a triple-double from, you know, being on the floor for 40 minutes and just being an active player, but you probably could have shot 23%. But as you can see, OKC record, I probably should have pulled this up. Their record when he gets a triple-double in the last couple years is amazing because he's just impacting the game in so many different ways. So if you just roll the ball out and you're chasing – you know, 10 assists and you go chase 10 rebounds and then get 10 points, that's completely different than being Draymond Green and touching on every aspect of the game and actually impacting what your team is doing by, you know, like I said, touching all the different parts of the game. So that's my thought on a triple-double. It's just some of them are impactful. Like, it's only going to be impactful if you're playing the game the right way, but if you're kind of chasing it and, you know, trying to just, you know, be – with this new trend of, triple-double, triple-double, then that's where it kind of gets messy.
Yeah. And just to close and just to reiterate exactly what you said, like when you're taking away from your teammates and the guys that are helping you win the game, like, because at the end of the day, there are other four guys on the floor. And although Paul George is definitely going to get his looks, when Terrence Ferguson's just standing there, four straight possessions, just with his hands just ready to shoot and he's not getting the ball, and it's not so much anymore, but – like you're kind of taking other people out of the game when you're involving yourself so much.
Shout out to Russell Westbrook, aspect, though. Amazing run.
Yeah, incredible feat.
I ain't gonna hold there. Shout out to Russ. Let's get it. Don't mess with the Brody. Don't talk about the Brody. Russell Westbrook fans are so sensitive, bro.
People are going to be up in arms just about that conversation just because we kind of gave him a little criticism. But it is what it is.
Shout out to the Brody.
Let me give you, so since the playoffs are starting next Saturday, I believe, let me just kind of give you the playoff matchup.
Yeah, I got it right in
scenarios.
Front of me, but yeah, just put it out there real quick for the people to hear, you know, what it's going to look like. Or I got it. I can read it out. So you need me to.
No, I just it's okay. Taking a second to look. So for the West, we'll start the West. Golden State, LAC. We saw that game last night, last game in Oracle. Golden State beat the breaks off the Clippers. Serious prediction for you.
The Clippers. I got the Warriors, bro. Why'd you even ask that? Keep going. Keep going.
Just laughed. Yeah, I just wanted to. I had to hear. Gotta get it down on paper. All right, then we got at the 4-5 matchup, Portland and Utah. Portland's a little short-handed.
Yo, stop jumping around, bro. Go 1-8, then go 2-7. Go 2-7.
Well, no, I'm reading it. So this is how it is on NBA.com. They have
the bracket
it,
version. Like, my bad. Bracket style, right down the line. So who's that? Portland and Utah?
Yeah, so the 4-5 matchup. Yeah, so this would be who would play Golden State.
I don't know. I mean, it's in Portland, but I want to take Utah because I think Utah just is that gritty-ass defensive team for the playoffs, and Portland only relies on those two guys, and Nurkic just went down. I don't know. I think I might take Utah.
Yeah, good. Also taking Utah 4-2. For the 3-6 matchup, we have Houston and OKC.
Well, kind of actually looking at this, it looks like this is how it's going to shape out. The standings are kind of, you know, getting a little dispersed. But who? OKC, Houston? Damn.
They're pretty solidified right now.
Mm-hmm. Every year, OKC, Houston, I feel like.
This is going to be the best first-round matchup.
I got Houston. But I don't – I got Houston. This C is the Spurs.
Why?
You don't. Why? So you have two ball dominant leaders and the best players. Well, key players on both teams are just ball dominant guys. Russ and Harden. Harden's just better than Russ. He's going to score at a more rapid rate. He's going to score with more efficiency. Just kind of how he does every time him and Russ face up in the playoffs. That's kind of how it's going to go down. That's how I look at it. Houston's been hot for the last 3-4 months. So, and OKC's kind of talent.
Can OKC's I rephrase the question? Can I rephrase the question? How does OKC win the series then, I guess? Like, what's the path for them to upset Houston?
I mean, we know what OKC is. They'd have to beat Houston up down low, just with their bigs, with Steven Adams, Nerlens Noel, you know, they're big dudes, and just out-rebound them and defend. That's the only way, because if you get into a three-point shooting contest with Houston, they're going to win. You get into a scoring competition in Houston, they're going to win. OKC can defend, but Houston have the home court advantage. I just got Houston. I don't really see OKC beating them unless they really beat them up down low and really out-rebound them and get more possessions consistently throughout the series.
I 100% agree. I think this year is going to be another year where we are once again questioning OKC. And we're wondering if this is something that we want to continue to kind of go with. Well, not we, because I'm not a part of OKC's organization, but they're going to have to start to really look at themselves internally and say, maybe what do we have to change to begin to compete for a championship? Because you don't want to just keep wasting these prime years with two superstar guys. But then let's go to Denver and San Antonio. I'm taking San Antonio. I don't care. I've seen more out of San Antonio. I know what I'm going to get. Pop is once again getting these guys. Like, I watched them a little bit a couple nights ago, and not saying they're a great team, but when you're playing against Denver, a semi-game series, like I have confidence in Pop to maybe push that series to 6-7, and once it gets that far, I'm taking the Spurs just off of history. And
I think it's a seven-game series. I think it goes 7. I can see Spurs in 6.
Yeah.
But if it goes 7, I got the Spurs either. I don't know, man. It's tough. It's tough. Because I think if the Spurs win
there's not enough on Denver.
If the Spurs win, it'll be in 6. They'd win at home in 6. But if it's 7, I'm giving Denver a chance in Denver. But I just have to see the series, bro. I can see it play out. I honestly do. I ain't trying to back out of the prediction, but it's going to be a tough one just because Denver's been hot all year, but one team's super experienced. But let's get to the East. You want to give the rundown?
Yeah, so top of the bracket. Yeah, top of the bracket right now, Milwaukee. versus Detroit. Again, Detroit has been slumping since we've had that last conversation. Really easy part of the schedule. And I said it to you earlier in the week, indicative of Drummond and Griffin not being great centerpieces to build around. It's kind of just sad if I'm a Pistons fan to see them at 39 and 41. But I'm taking Milwaukee.
Sad,
I'm sure
you got Ish Smith, bro. Tripping. Detroit is elite. Nah, I'm taking Milwaukee. I kind of wish they play like Brooklyn or somebody that really beat them up a little bit in the first round. I think the Pistons actually can, though. They can pose a little threat because they have, they have Drummond and Blake who can bang down low, and Blake is going to be somebody to go against to kind of X out what Giannis is doing. Hopefully, Blake can get 25 and 30 a game this series. So, I think that'd be really important for, the next couple of rounds, how these first rounds shape up. But of course, I have Milwaukee, the best team in basketball this year. 60 wins. Only 60 win team in the league right now.
Crazy. Then next, the second 4-5 matchup, who would be playing Milwaukee, potentially Boston and Indiana. Boston with the 4 seed, Indiana with the 5.
I was kind of hoping Indiana would get the 4 seed to be home. But I got Boston, better team. No Oladipo. Boston's been clicking. They lost last night to Orlando, but I think they've won 4 or 5.
Yeah, if they drop another one, they're tied. Yeah, so they're only one. They're separated by one game, and Indiana owns the tiebreaker.
I don't think they do. No, they don't.
I'm pretty sure. Didn't they beat Boston?
I know for a fact they don't, because I remember they said if all three of us tied, Boston would have the 3 seed, and it kind of goes on your record facing all three other teams, the other two teams. And Boston just beat Indiana the other night too. So I think Boston was up 2-1 in the series. I got Boston. Who you got?
Yeah, Boston. I think Boston in 5. I don't think Indiana has enough firepower to make that those 6 games, or to make it just a competitive series. It kind of just stinks to see them without Oladipo. Just it feels like he just has like a really bad.
I got Boston in 7.
Man, I would love to just see him back next year. All right, explain how you think Indiana
Boston,
pushes this.
Because Boston is 20-20 this year on the road. They don't win road games. They didn't win road games last year in the playoffs. They would have lost 2 games in Philly if we didn't fuck it up. We were up in that game. Even in game 2 out there in Boston, we could have won. Not to get back into that series too much, but Boston doesn't really dominate on the road. They lost 3 games to Milwaukee last year with half a coach and not even close to a good roster. So I think Indiana at home, they could pull out a couple games. I think they could pull out 3 games at home, even if it's stealing one in Boston, which I don't really see that happen. But I think Indiana comes back and defends their home court and surprises everybody, makes that a tough-ass series on Boston that they have to pull out in game 7.
Yeah, obviously I would love to see that. Then next we have Philly and Brooklyn at the 3-6. My prediction is that we beat Brooklyn 6. It's scary for me just because, as we said earlier in the podcast, that we struggle with really good guard play, and Brooklyn could be one of those teams where we can find ourselves down 2-1. Then we have to kind of show our moxie and merit.
2-1?
Where? Yeah, I can see it.
I mean, how, though? Like, what games will we lose?
I can see us splitting at home. Yeah. So we'd split at home, and then I can see Brooklyn taking that first game in Brooklyn, just because like the kind of team we've been all year. It's like we have to wait for somebody to wake us up, and then we start to play rather than like it seems like we're kind of just getting
That's
the jump
a good
on
point.
Team.
I like that.
I mean, obviously, I would like to see us at
sweep
at home, split on the road, and then come back.
So my prediction in that series, man. But my prediction in that series. I hope we sweep them dudes, man. We can sweep them. Like, we got the team too. The roster. I mean, the playoffs. We have the experience. This is their first year in, which can be a good or a bad thing for them because they don't know what they don't know. But I mean, we have the talent. Like, we are. If you're playing 7-8 guys in the playoffs and the shorts up, like our first 7-8 guys are so much better and so much bigger. They are such a small team that we should be able to dominate. But I got 6 and 5. I'm hoping that, it's a gentleman's sweep. I hope we win our first 2, split over there and then come back and win game five, kind of like the Miami series from last year. I hope it's the same exact thing. Obviously, Brooklyn's an up-and-coming team with good young guards, but I don't think it's anything we should struggle with.
Yeah, definitely expect them to be in that 4 or 5 spot left next year. I don't think
they should struggle with.
Just given their talent level. And then the last one we'll touch on is Toronto-Orlando, the 2-7 matchup.
Corny-ass matchup.
Personally, I think Toronto sweeps them. Yeah, I think Orlando is snuck into the playoffs. I don't even understand why they wanted to make the playoffs this year.
They don't got no lottery picks, bro.
But I guess you kind of...
They don't have any picks. They might as well play for it. They don't got no lottery picks. I saw that earlier. But, I mean, there's no surprise. Yeah. We know why Orlando snuck into the playoffs, because they got Markel Fultz. I mean, it's no secret. Nah, I'm playing. But,
true.
Yeah, Kel brought some good vibes. Kel never missed the playoffs. Just saying. But, anyway, I got Toronto. I mean, Toronto, I think Toronto's the deepest team in basketball. I've said that on this podcast multiple times. Orlando is, they snuck into it. It should be fun to see, you know, a new team in there. I like seeing the bottom of the East kind of switch up every couple years. I would have loved to see Kemba in the playoffs, to be honest. He still has a chance, a slight chance. They're one game back, just like the Heat of the 8th seed behind Detroit. But, I like to see Orlando in the playoffs just because they haven't been there. I think they had the longest drought in the NBA of not making the playoffs since 2011. So, that should be fun to watch. But I got Toronto in 4 or 5.
Okay. Yeah. Also, I have Toronto in a sweep, but if it goes 5, then so be it. But, ladies and gentlemen, we'd just like to wrap up this TNT Hoops shoot around. Gave you guys 55 minutes, a little longer than we wanted to today. Again, thank you for bearing with us just because we did this conversation over the phone. When the playoffs start, just expect a lot more content and a lot more engagement and interaction with you guys. We'll give an update on the TNT Hoops shoot around contest.
Right now.
We'll probably push it back just towards playoffs since there wasn't really much happening this week. But Quiddy and I will sit down and talk about that. Once again,
yeah, like Andrew said, just touching all that TNT Hoops. Y'all know the vibes. Tune in, tell your friends, post, do whatever you got to do. But listen to TNT Hoops. We here for you, Quitting Silly. TNT Hoops, we out, Ansel. Good convo, bro. One.
Love conversation over the phone. When the playoffs start, just expect a lot more content and a lot more engagement and interaction with you guys. We'll give an update on the TNT Hoops shoot around contest. We'll probably push it back just towards playoffs since there wasn't really much happening this week. But Quiddy and I will sit down and talk about that. Once again, thanks for listening.